Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
As deep cries out to deep, ladies and gents, welcome to the Football Ramble. There was a cracker at the Brentford Community Stadium and Arsenal won the North London Derby. It's Monday, 27th of September. I'm Marcus Feller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Welcome, one and all. What a great weekend it was, Luke Moore. Did you have a good one, pal?
It was great, thanks. You had a fantastic time. Lots of great football to watch. Yeah. It's been a brilliant start to the season, by the way.
Oh, hasn't it?
Good time really to say this to Jim Campbell.
Jim Campbell, the man in red over there. Jim, some people might say when it comes to the North London Derby and Arsenal and Spurs and all that kind of stuff, you can be quite a petty man. Well, here's your chance now to prove them wrong.
I don't need to be petty. I can just talk about what happened. It's ideal. It's perfect. I don't even need to. Like, don't even need hyperbole.
Oh, Jimmy, baby, you must have bloody loved that.
Honestly, I've been unwell. Mm-hmm. I had a bit of a time of it last week, and you've supported
Arsenal for a number of years now.
Yeah, honestly, I needed this personally, and Arsenal delivered. It was fantastic performance.
Marcus, did Jim deserve this, though?
Let's not get into that. Yeah, I was going to say, we'd be a bit thin on the ground if we start talking about things Jim deserves. Yeah. But Mikel Arteta, you could argue, deserved it, Luke Moore, because it looked like he had a plan. For crying out loud. I mean, Arsenal, the way they beat Spurs in that first half really was quite incredible. And yeah. Hugo Lloris said Spurs got smashed.
Yeah, he did. He spoke very well on the post-match interview I saw for the Spurs website, which I'm sure will be a great consolation to the Spurs fans listening.
Yeah. They're not listening, are they?
No, they're not. Arsenal did look like they had a plan, but I would kind of counter by saying it's very easy to play to a plan when you're playing against 11 slugs and a gigantic salt pot who are just writhing around in their own shit,
yeah,
not knowing what to do.
So you've gone with the Graham Souness route of being furious with Arsenal because Spurs were shit.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he?
Channel it.
Tony Adams looked
like, oh my God.
Tony Adams, in usual sort of eccentric, avuncular style, was there with his pink socks on, absolutely loving life. And Graham Souness, as you say, was like, I'm trying to ruin that man's afternoon.
It was so. I enjoyed that so much because Tony Adams was like, he's sort of given up on the idea that he's going to be a regular pundit, isn't he? So he's just being himself
be
now.
A regular anything. And
he's like, as you say, very avuncular, but he's like your antique stealing uncle that you see every 3 years at some family party who his idea of himself is the life and soul of the party.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't want to take anything seriously.
Uh-huh. But you want to see him more. You always think, whenever you see him, you always think, I wish I saw more of him.
Yeah, but I think if you did, it wouldn't be a good idea.
Shit. Yeah.
But Souness, like, does that thing of just he makes the same point over and over again with increasing degrees of fury. And Adams wasn't having it.
I know. No. I was so good.
He even put his arm up at one point, do the old offside thing, just playing the hits. They do not do that on Sky. No. Like, you don't do that on Sky.
No. Oh, not since Thierry Henry touched Jamie Carragher's leg.
No.
But I also felt sorry for Ledley, who was a bit out of his depth.
Yeah. I think actually, well, Ledley, yeah. He seemed very nervous, didn't he? And obviously,
well, because his knee was so close to the table.
No.
And so he would have hit it again. No, that's what I thought it might be. I thought he was a bit worried about it. Listen, I respect Ledley King a great deal. Amazing defender, brilliant player, clearly really important to the backroom staff of Spurs. I'm just saying, as a pundit there, he's a bit out of his depth. There's no shame in that.
But also, he's just seen his side, his team get pumped 3-1, which should have been 4 or 5, probably.
It should have been, absolutely should have been. Can I defend Graham Souness on this occasion?
Please do.
Because I know that Souness...
Is he at the window?
No, yeah, I've been told to defend him in my earpiece. No, I'm not frightened of Graham. I don't know him.
You are frightened. We're all frightened.
I'm frightened of him.
I think you've met him and said he was lovely.
He was lovely, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, game recognises game. It was like that Spider-Man meme pointed at each other.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, which one am I most scared of? It's Graham. But I do think there's some truth in what Souness was saying at times in the studio, where he was saying that, you know, I mean, I know he expresses himself in quite a furious way, but what he was saying effectively was, it doesn't matter what formation you play, what style you play, what you want to do. If you're going to be second to every single ball, and I know that's not fashionable. I know these days it's all about shape and style and formation and trust in the process and all this kind of stuff. He's absolutely right.
He is right.
The same way, if you are a defender running back towards your own goal and you're under pressure, you don't... Top defenders don't think, oh, but we're playing possession football here, so I can't put it out for a throw. They'll just put it out for a throw because that's the right decision.
Yeah.
It can be more than one thing. And as soon as he's right here, I wouldn't have played, personally, for whatever it's worth, I wouldn't have played the way Spurs played against Arsenal away anyway. But the fact that they did is irrelevant if they're going to apply themselves like that. Mm-hmm. And so on that particular point, I think Souness is absolutely right. And I don't want to take anything away from Arsenal because they deserved it. There's a massive win for them. It feels a bit like it might be a kind of hallmark performance, a real turning point for them. Because on Friday, as I said, we said, Marcus, one team looks like they're on the verge of something terrible, and one team looks like they might be about to turn a corner. And so it came to pass. But Spurs were poor. They were really poor. Oh, Arsenal looked like they were going to score every time they went forward.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, you get the sense, and obviously this has got a huge amount to do with how long the managers have been in their post, you get the sense that Arsenal know how to play. They've actually figured their system out now, and it's starting to gel.
Figuring, yeah.
Yeah. But it's on the way, certainly. The process is being trusted, shall we say, by the players. And Spurs don't really know what their system is yet. And they're still getting to grips with it. And that's obviously because, you know, he's been there for, what, 6 games? Yeah. And I think that created a bit of a perfect storm, particularly in that first half. Because, Nuno even said that he got his selection wrong and his tactics wrong. And everything he essentially could get wrong, he did get wrong. But I think from an Arsenal point of view, what was so satisfying about that first half, apart from the 3 goals against the little slugs, was... was how actually, you know, quite often you look at your team on paper and you think, oh, I tell you what, that looks pretty tasty. And then it doesn't necessarily come to pass. It absolutely did yesterday. The players looked silky. You know, the flicks here and there. Odegaard in particular looked like a PS5 player on the ball. Thomas Partey added so much. We were talking last week about how important keeping him fit is. Like he brought control to midfield. Yeah, absolutely.
Partey, I mean, he missed the league defeats this season through injury, and then since he's been back in the side, Arsenal have won. Now, okay, Norwich, he came on as a sub, but Burnley, obviously now Spurs, played in the win against FC Wimbledon in the cup. But you're right, he is a crucial player. But those players, I mean, Odegaard was, you know, given the keys to to North London, for crying out loud, and so much space. But he, you know, Emile Smith Rowe, he said it was the best day of his life. But him and Saka and Odegaard behind Aubameyang, I mean, that does look pretty good.
And that's what I would have played. I don't know. First of all, I don't know what Dele Alli's doing in the side. He shouldn't be in the team. So I would have played Højbjerg and Skip. He likes Skip. He seems to like Skip. Skip had a good season last season. He seems ready to step up. I'd play him and Højbjerg in front of the back four, give them some extra protection, given that Arsenal's strength are exactly in those positions you're talking about, and you're away from home. Then I would play the 3 players behind Kane. I would play Moura can get beyond Kane. I know everyone gets beyond Kane now because he plays fucking centre sweeper for some reason, but people can get beyond him. Son can get beyond him. And you play someone behind Kane who's a bit cuter that isn't Dele Alli. I know Ali kind of has played some really good stuff back in the day in that position, but he's not that player now.
And also, as you say, Kane now drops into the positions where Ali was most effective. So it's kind of like...
Spurs only tactic, it seemed to me, was to lump the ball forward to Kane in the first 15 minutes and test the quality of Gabriel and Ben White. Mm. And when Ben White stood up to it, that was it. There was nothing more to it than that. And then the second half, they kind of... I thought Arsenal massively took a foot off the gas in the second half.
I was a bit annoyed by that because I think Spurs should have had a penalty.
They should have,
And that could have been very, very different, sure. especially given that they conceded the goal against Son. That was quite nervy because this is one of the things with these derby games, right? Mm. Like, obviously, it's terrible if you lose it and it'll bother you all season. But you're almost more nervous when you're ahead and even when you're quite far ahead because we've seen these games turn on their heads before. And if you throw it away from a position of strength, that's the worst. Like, you never get over those ones. So that's the kind of the nerviness I was feeling, especially when Son scored and like thinking, oh, God, maybe should have conceded a penalty there. But ultimately...
Well, Aaron Ramsdale saved Jim.
Yes. What a save that was.
Jordan Pickford-esque.
It was. It was very, very good. He's done very well since coming into the team. Credit where it's due. Everyone was a little bit unsure, but...
It was a phenomenal save, but that goes in. I mean, it provides a final 4 or 5 minutes, which, as an Arsenal fan, you don't need.
Oh, absolutely. although the end of the game was Sergei Reguilon trying to stop a ball going out from a throw... putting it out for an Arsenal goal kick, which ended the game, which I did enjoy.
Let's Jim have his say, everybody. But look, it's funny though, when we suddenly, I think Spurs, you know, the problems are there. No one would disagree, and they were exposed yet again. We've seen that against Palace and against Chelsea as well. But with Arsenal, I mean, it wasn't that, you know, it was only a few results ago, if you remember the manner of the performance against Manchester City. I know sides can get hammered by Manchester City, especially if they go down to 10 men. Klopp's Liverpool not that long ago when Mane was sent off, I think they lost 5-0 as well. So the result maybe not, we can sort of understand that. But suddenly there's, Arteta's got a plan, this, that and the other. It wasn't that long ago where people were saying, come on, Arsenal need to move him around. He's had time in the job. What do you make of that whole situation at Arsenal? Are we being a bit too fickle now, suddenly saying, Arsenal, they're grand and they're going to go on and do good things?
No, I think the problems at Arsenal are structural and they remain. And they remain the problems in the areas that we've already identified. The difference here is that Spurs are very poor and that Arsenal have a lot of players come back and they also have a lot of young players. So at the very least, you can say, well, look, you can change your opinion slightly and say they weren't up against much yesterday, in my opinion. It's not to take anything away from Jim.
Well, they weren't.
I still don't think they're not going to finish any higher than sort of high mid-table, I wouldn't have thought.
I wouldn't think so.
And I think Spurs will probably finish around the same. Mm. So, I mean, not really. In a way, it could be, it depends how Arsenal challenge it. It could channel it. It could be a really big turning point for them, as I've already said. But the reality is, I think Arsenal, when they come up against good teams, particularly away from home, they'll probably get beaten and they'll be good enough to beat teams that aren't that good. My fear for Spurs is that, you know, we can talk about being fickle. We can say, Nuno's only in his sixth game in charge or whatever. The players should be at it. They should be banging at it to impress a new manager. Because you want to play.
And that's what Souness was saying.
It's been a new manager to thud. Really,
it has. It has very much so.
I mean, some all right results at the start of the season. You know, what was it, sort of three?
The big city.
Yeah, exactly. Fair, yeah. So, you know, but yes, when you...
It's a weird result, that, though.
But when you think about, you know, Santo in the job, I mean, he was way down the list.
Yeah, I like that you're calling him Santo. No one calls him that.
Yeah.
Well,
it seems
weird.
It seems less formal somehow.
Yeah, it does. Santo.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Nuno Espirito Santo.
You're right about the fact that everyone knows he wasn't the first choice.
He was way down the line. I mean, he was almost like a panic appointment, you could say. And then I just...
Like me in a restaurant, when I don't know what to get, I'll always get the burger. My wife calls it a panic burger.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Nuno is a panic burger of an appointment.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think that's fair. But yes, with old Santo, we know the situation there. But if you think about Spurs generally, Jim, you know, people now are saying, but they should never have got rid of Pochettino. Oh, they were this, that, and the other. I mean, Tony Adams quite oddly claimed that Jose Mourinho was doing a fantastic job when he was sacked by Spurs.
Well done, Agent Tony.
in April. But it does seem a mess. And it does seem Daniel Levy, who has made some very shrewd decisions in the past, and people have given him sort of credit for bringing Spurs up to this sort of, well, not now in the current form, but a previously Champions League club and challenging for the titles and so on. It seems a little while ago now. It seems now that he not selling Kane, they could have got a lot of money there. They've now got a player who looks disinterested and so on. It seems like he's got a bit fuddled and they're not in a good position.
No, at the start of the season, though, everyone was sort of laughing at Arsenal, calling them a banter club and blah, blah, blah.
Well, they asked for a banter club, let's be fair.
Yeah, but I mean, the degrees of the you know,
they're both banter clubs.
The degrees of the crisis are always exaggerated, and I think the same thing is happening here at Spurs. They're not like, it's not like they're going to fucking drop out the league or anything, is it? But I think the Kane situation is such an interesting one because it's hard to judge it at the moment, because at the moment it looks like they should have sold him slash maybe they should think about selling him in January. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, we're only 4 or 5 games in. It doesn't take Harry Kane long to turn his form around. All he'll need is a goal and he'll probably get firing again. What's interesting is he's not involved that much, is he? He's not having that many touches. His mm-hmm. body language looks interesting. It clearly, he's still hurting from what happened mm-hmm. and he's frustrated by the fact that the team are clearly just going to kind of do what they normally do and finish where you would expect them to finish. But... Well, there are better players there than the performance that we saw yesterday.
I mean, Gary Neville,
I think Nuno will get it out of them sooner rather than later.
Jim, Gary Neville said that Kane and Son look like they've had their balloons burst at a kid's party.
I can see why he said that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't have as much, weirdly, I don't have as much confidence in what's happening at Spurs as Jim seems to have.
I was going to say, Jim, I think you've been more
kind,
than fair.
You're being kind. I think I said it at the time and I still think it now, that statement that Kane put out, this summer was doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Yep.
He looks like he doesn't want to be there. Whether he can turn that around or not is I guess a matter of debate. But ultimately, that's going to be of cold comfort to Spurs fans because it's all very well. I'm not having a go at you, Jim, but it's very all very well saying, well, you know, he just needs to go on, he'll be fine. He should be fucking playing now.
Yeah.
They need him now. Like they look terrible. They look awful. And It's not a crumb of comfort to a Spurs fan, I imagine, to hear that in 2 months' time, Kane might get a goal.
Yeah.
He needs to be playing well now.
I think, that's fair. But, you know, we know that footballers are human beings. And if you look at the circumstances with Kane staying at Spurs, essentially when he didn't really want to because of all this stuff, you know, whatever is true and whatever is not about his brother, it's almost Shakespearean in its scope. That is going to have a huge, huge effect on you. So
I think, and going back very quickly to Levy, I think I've completely lost the plot there.
No,
I think you know, you can probably be positive about some of the signings that Paratici's brought in. The manager is not going to be the manager who's going to take them forward. And to have that reality so early on in this tenure is frightening. Mm. And I think almost you get to the point now where you could write, I mean, talking about being fickle, I think you could probably write Spurs season off now.
Mm. No, I hear you, pal. I hear you. Gentlemen, move on to another London club. Brentford got a good point against Liverpool. 3-3. What a game it was.
Oh, wow.
What a game it was. So much so, Jurgen Klopp and Thomas Frank exchanged smiles at the end of the game.
I don't care who wins the league. Brentford are the best team in the Premier League.
Is that right?
They're just so much fun.
Yeah.
They're just an absolute joy.
Yeah. Thomas Frank, he's a confident man, we'll call
him.
But he's certainly having a good time. And my goodness, he has worked his socks off to get Brentford into this position.
Yeah.
They're there. We know much has been said about the new stadium. It's all shiny. But this is a phenomenal period in that club's history. And Frank is very much the man. Great hair, by the way, as well. But they went with Liverpool toe-to-toe and got a point. And, of course, if it wasn't for a marginal offside with Tony, he could have won the game.
Yeah.
He's got so many offside goals so far this season.
I know. He just needs to take just a half a step back.
Yeah. I think that might be his third offside goal, and they're all quite narrow. And they did go toe to toe, Marcus. You're right. And there was a period of play which is one of the most remarkable periods of play of the season, where one team went up the end, and the other one cleared off the line, and the other team went off the end, and the other one cleared off the line.
Yeah.
Maybe think, like, if you don't really watch football, you would think that was like a regular thing.
Like, how amazing is this sport? Well, I've never watched this before. Yeah.
Klopp said that we called the game a wild ride, which was quite enjoyable. He said Liverpool played some good football, but they couldn't deal with Brentford's long balls. And that's it's a funny thing with Brentford. They've got an interesting style, but they do like to play direct. And when you've got a forward like Tony up there, he can do some damage. And I think that when sometimes you sort of say a long ball, a long pass, you know, maybe sort of say,
but long ball implies it's like really high in the air, doesn't it?
It's not a hoof. This is not hit and hope football. It's a calculated approach. But look, we know sometimes that when teams do play direct, coming up from the Championship, actually that's not such a bad plan, because we see Norwich sort of struggling a little bit trying to play their style, and we've seen Fulham do it as well. Two obvious sort of yo-yo clubs at the moment. Whereas Brentford, playing this sort of style of football, using a bit of pace and strength, but a bit of guile as well, it's so far so good for them.
It is, and I think I would refine it slightly by saying that I don't think they do play based on what I've seen this season, I don't think they do play just direct.
No,
I think they're prepared to go direct at key moments.
Well, against a side like Liverpool, if Liverpool's sort of pressing, you know, they've got a lot of industry in
that midfield. Yeah,
exactly. That's a perfectly good tactic.
And they played some lovely stuff against Liverpool at times, and they also played some lovely stuff against Wolves in a game they should have won by more. I think they're great to watch. They're a great team to watch. They're not too proud to go long. But if you look at Ethan Pinnock, who scored one of the goals, I think he scored the opening goal. Mm. I think his pass success rate was 100%.
Yeah.
So he's playing one of three centre backs. So you're not going to be playing long ball all day and have 100% from a centre back. So they clearly are able to.
Unless you're Ronald Koeman.
Well, maybe he wouldn't play it long, would he?
Ronald Koeman.
Just smash it as hard as he can.
He loved a raker when he was at the back. He'd just knock it all the way, like 80-yard passes to Bergkamp's feet, and Bergkamp would just pluck it out of the sky.
And go down for a pen, and Koeman would score the pen.
There you go. So until you're doing that, Brentford, we're not interested.
But we talked about it on Friday. We said, and I remember, we said, Liverpool won't have it all their own way. And I actually think going to the Brentford Community Stadium this season is going to be one of the hardest tasks for teams in the Premier League. It's what they've lived for. It's what they've waited for so long. There's only 16-odd thousand of them there, but they create such a noise.
Yeah.
And they're confident now. And they've started the season so well that confidence is going to continue. Now, in the second half of the season, when they get figured out a little bit, which we always see happen, really, it may be a bit difficult. And they're going to have to come through difficult periods. But I thought they played really, really well.
But that's what I mean.
Well worth their point.
But that's what I mean by that sort of direct style that they played against Liverpool. That will always... I'd say always. That is, if you have different styles of play that Brentford do, you know, Frank is a good coach and he's tactically quite astute. They can mix it up, and they showed that against Liverpool. And if you play that style, you know, you're going to get a little bit of joy. The statistics back that up.
Yeah, but also, as Luke's touched on, with a new stadium and this being sort of an adventure, there is a real sense from Brentford, which is quite mad, really, given that they're on their maiden Premier League season, that there's nothing to lose. Mm. When actually there's everything to lose.
Sure, I know
but
what
you mean. They've just sort of cut that idea out of their thinking completely. And they treat Liverpool in the same way they'll treat like Norwich. Like,
sure, they
don't care, exactly.
Don't give a damn.
They don't care who you are. Mm. They're out to impose themselves.
And they've also got such a clear plan. They know what they're doing. It reminds me a couple of years ago. I said to you guys a couple of years ago, around this time of the season, I said, Leeds will finish in the top half this season. Mm. There's no way they're going to go down. And I feel similarly about Brentford. Mm. I think there's very, very little chance based on what we've seen so far. And it's caveated by the fact they're going to have to overcome some adversity. And we'll find out a lot about them when they get that, because they're not a team. Mm-hmm. They've been for so long knocking on the door of the Premier League. They've been a successful team. They win.
Yeah.
And they just come short. They won't have been for a period of time where they've gone 5-6 games without a win, and how they react, that's really important. But that aside, if they come through that, no chance they get relegated this season. Not a chance. Their home form will be far too good.
Well, I feel like Thomas Frank is a huge asset there as well. He'll guide them through that.
Yeah, I mean, to pick themselves up when they got beaten by Fulham in the playoff final, when the neutrals wanted them to go through, there was such a big feeling around the club at the time. To pick themselves up and then they get promoted the following year and then do this, it shows you the character of a lot of the people at that club. But what about Liverpool themselves? I mean, Mo Salah scored his 100th Prem goal for Liverpool, the fastest Liverpool player in history to score 100 top-flight goals. Of course, Roger Hunt and Jack Parkinson scored 100 goals for Liverpool quicker, but some of those were in the second tier. So, you know, when we sort of fashion these records,
I do think on this case,
very impressive.
I do think on this occasion, Mark, it's actually worth mentioning that, because yeah, I think weirdly, because of the way he plays in this rotating three, and he's not someone you look at and you think straight away out and out striker.
Yeah.
It doesn't get said often enough that he is one of the best Premier League strikers.
One of the best strikers in the world.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of Premier League history.
Oh yeah.
Because you look at a player like, he's a similar physical profile to, say, a player like Aguero.
Yeah.
But they play very different styles.
Yeah.
And Aguero's known as this kind of out-and-out goal scorer. Mm-hmm. And the reason the conversation around him leaving City when Pep took over, which, of course, he eventually did, but he had a bit of an Indian summer there, was because, he doesn't really do this, that, and the other. Mm. But Salah kind of does everything, but still scores amazing amounts of goals. He doesn't get enough credit, really, for his goal-scoring record, I don't think.
His consistency is unbelievable. I think maybe part of it is because, obviously, for so much of his time there, you've had Firmino and Mane in there, and they almost come as a three. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's right. I mean,
it's Jota now, of course.
Absolutely, yeah. But that just kind of continues that idea of rotating the goals around, doesn't it? But, yeah, for him to get so many in a in a lineup like that is phenomenal and does mask it a bit. I completely agree. He is an all-time great that we're witnessing now.
Yeah, well, they've got to be careful, Liverpool, as they well know, because his contract does run out reasonably. So what is it, June
23.
You know, there's chat about trying to extend the contract.
It's traditionally around the quarter time when they start talking about extending.
Yeah, yeah, and there are discussions there. Liverpool fans will be anxiously awaiting that signature.
You wonder where he'd go.
Mourinho's Roma.
Go back there.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. He had a great time under Mourinho. They got on really well.
Well, why not back to...
get the band back together.
Back to his old club Chelsea, like Lukaku.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Could do that.
So all the great goodwill we just got from Liverpool fans over the last 10 minutes is now
been
undone.
Absolutely dashed.
Yeah.
But genuinely, a player of that calibre, you would always look at the two Spanish clubs as a potential destination.
Well, he's
but
not going to Barcelona, is he?
No. Well, exactly. I mean, Real Madrid have got their own problems as well that they seem to be just completely ignoring. Mm-hmm. Don't know how that works.
But they've got a bottomless pit.
Well, indeed. Yeah. Well, it's that they throw old managers into
Barcelona's. Yeah, Barcelona's deal until they need him back again.
Yeah.
Throw a rope ladder down.
Yeah.
No, Carlo, yeah, just let Carlo know.
Grab on.
Yeah, yeah. Not you, Rafa.
Yeah. Never you.
Yeah. I think the way Barcelona do things now, they've got a very interesting model. You know, you've heard a lot about the Moneyball model, for example, at Brentford.
Yeah.
The way Barcelona do it is they could go and get Salah, mm-hmm. but all he would do is defer his salary for 40 years.
That's it.
And
that's all you've got to do.
Yeah, and then they can get him back.
There you are, you see.
Get him in there, yeah.
Easy peasy.
Yeah.
Easy peasy.
I heard that on one of the Athletic shows.
Appreciate that. Right then, let's have a quick break, everybody.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
To run and does. Can he play a colleague through? It's Jacob Murphy released. Murphy one on one. Jacob Murphy to win it.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Oh. Jacob Murphy with a chance to win the game against Watford for Newcastle United there.
And crucially, that's the only coverage of a Newcastle game we're doing today.
Yeah.
That's all we need, yeah.
That's all you need. Right, everybody, let's see how we got on in Betway's 4 to Score. Entry to Betway's 4 to Score is free each week. Pick the first goal scorer in Betway's 4 selected matches for your chance to win the weekly £50,000 jackpot. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game. Further T's and C's apply. In game one, Brentford versus Liverpool, I picked Mo Salah. It was, of course, Ethan Pinnock. Oh, Salah was so close to getting that first one, but it was all in vain. Southampton versus Wolves was game two. Andy picked Raul Jimenez. Of course, it was Raul Jimenez. Well done, Andy. Game three, Arsenal versus Tottenham. Jim picked Bukayo Saka. He did score, but it wasn't the first one. The first goal scorer in that game was Emile Smith-Rowe, of course. And in game four, Crystal Palace versus Brighton is still to come tonight. You have picked Neil Morpay.
I think if I get that right, that'll be... I know you don't get any points for half points in this, mm-hmm. Because Saka scored. That'll be 2.5 out of 4.
It's 2 out of 4 if you get it right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've nothing more to add there.
Yeah, well, I
just try and give people a bit of hope.
Yeah.
Just try and say, look, you know, you can come close here.
Well, Andy's got
no
one.
No one's picking Ethan Pinnock in that game. First
no,
game.
No,
no one's
one
picking
no
him.
One is. Oh, Sat, he was so close.
Yeah.
He was so close, but yet so far. We'll be back for another round of Four to Score on the preview show this Friday. Right, everybody, it's time for emails.
Rumble. Showatfootballramble.com.
Really like his hair.
Todden has been in touch. He says, short-term listener, first-time emailer. I hope that's all right. Crying emoji.
Is that a dig at me?
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
To continue your throwing through glass chat, I too have had a trip through a glass pane. My grandparents' house in Nigeria was pretty big, as they can be out there, and my cousins and I were sprinting around playing wrestling, as you do. I remember it well. I was a pretty chunky child and had the stamina of Willian in a pre-season game. Willian, don't miss him. So I very quickly became completely exhausted and plopped down on the nearest chair. But a chair it was not. I had found myself crashing through my grandma's antique glass-topped table, uniquely placed between two sofas. Most people would think your momentum would either go through the table, or I would be too light, bounce off, and that would be that. But my prepubescent, chunkier than most children, but equally not adult-sized body, decided to split these options and wedge my fat ass in this glass table.
That's terrible.
It then took a family effort to first get me out of the table and then to, bit by bit, pick shards of bloody glass out of me. I then had to travel belly down to the nearest hospital for the doctors to stitch me back together.
Oh, man.
Todden, that is awful.
It's like he's been attacked by Roma Ultras.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's what they do, isn't it? Oh, no one wants a glassy ass. That's awful.
Belly down to the hospital is particularly undignified.
Yeah, pretty embarrassing.
Well, I always think about that. I think about when you arrive at the hospital and people, everyone's there looking at you.
Yeah.
They think, oh, what has this guy done?
Yeah.
That's terrible. I'm sorry to hear it, Todden. But thanks for emailing so early on in your ramble tenure.
Yes.
More people should
with
be
a
the
great
same.
Story.
Yeah, it's a great
absolutely
story.
Nailed it.
And I've got one here from Dan Owen who says, I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I've discovered that if you warm up a Marks and Spencer Percy Pig and slightly stretch the sides, you've got yourself a raspberry flavoured Ron Atkinson head.
Of course you do.
I can see it. I can see
it
that.
Makes sense.
You know everyone knows Ron Atkinson as Big Ron.
Yeah.
Do you know what his other two official nicknames
are? I hate to think.
One is Mr. Bojangles, which I quite like.
God.
And the other one is just the tank.
The septic tank.
The tank.
Oh, by the way, apparently Dan Owen, he sent that email at 10:30 on Friday night.
Oh, okay, right.
Checks out.
Yeah.
Train home from the pub.
Maybe.
Percy Pigs at Victoria Station.
Thanks very much.
The Marks and
Spencer. Lighter.
Yeah. Must tell people who will appreciate this.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you have very much, Dan. Appreciate that. Show at footballramble.com for that kind of nonsense, or indeed if you've had some sort of dalliance with a pane of glass.
Yeah.
Right, everybody, back to the Premier League. Oh, it was a big one on Saturday, early afternoon. Chelsea 0, Manchester City 1. Pep was absolutely purring after the match.
He was for a bit, and then he did about 3 minutes on the Ryder Cup.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Again, he can't just do anything normally.
He was just, it was full flow. Yeah. Pep Guardiola at his finest and his most... I won't use that word. It is most jubilant, shall we say.
Do you still think of him as a weird peanut, Jim?
Yeah, I think so. Strange.
What's your big highlight of? Is it when he sweated through that jumper?
My highlight of Pep Guardiola, I'd have to think about that. Maybe the Nathan Redmond thing.
Yeah.
Because that's really mad.
Redmond is peak.
Well, running onto the pitch to shout at an opposing player about how good he is.
Yeah. No, but how annoyed that, why didn't you attack my team more?
Yeah.
Yeah, very odd.
Can't help himself. But actually, the New York thing was good as well when he was like coaching that team.
Yeah.
Like a referee. They needed someone to replace a referee and he did it, but he kept stopping the game to coach them and no one knew who he was.
Yeah. What about when someone threw a twirl at Edison? That was
during the game.
Yeah. I listen, unless it's one of those new limited edition orange flavored twirls, which I'd like to try.
Yeah. They are good.
But a twirl is a low level chocolate bar.
I like a twirl.
I do like a twirl.
But the thing is, though, I'm bad at this game because I can't really think of many chocolate bars I don't like.
Yeah, but to be fair, Luke didn't say whether he liked it or not. He's called it low level.
Mm.
I just think it's a panic buy.
You think about pizza, well, maybe you get low level pizza, but it's still going to taste all right.
True. No, I think it does taste all right, but I think if you're looking, the problem with a twirl is it's not aerated like an Aero. But it's got a lot of air in it, and so you're not getting much. You don't get much bang for your buck, and I think the Chelsea fan, presumably, who threw that,
probably knew that.
I we're losing at home,
yeah.
And I've got this fucking 12 to look forward
right,
to.
Well,
forget it.
What have I got to do? I've got to throw a missile onto the pitch.
I was just going to say, Jim, I'm surprised Edison didn't intercept that before it could have got to him.
Yeah, that's true.
Just in his mouth.
Yeah, or just booted it out of the ground.
Yeah,
I personally think
it perfectly.
Yeah, exactly.
To Gabriel Jesus.
So back to where it came from, right on the chop assistant's little
refund comes the other way. Catches that as well.
I think a twirl is a flake with more structural integrity.
And a border outside.
I completely agree, because I quite like a flake, but I mean, they haven't mugged us off really calling it that. It's a bit of annoying.
The people at Cadbury have learnt the error of their ways there, because half the flake used to end up on the floor.
Exactly.
Jim was
or in the bath.
Jim was about to say something quite revolutionary.
I was going to say, do you think that chocolate orange actually tastes anything like orange?
No.
I don't think it does.
The same way beef crisps don't taste of beef.
No. We just buy into it. We take the fucking blue pill when it comes to this stuff.
I think roast beef crisps are the biggest convincing argument that we're living in a simulation that could exist, because it's basically what a load of other people have decided that you think is beef crisps. Mm. You know it's not beef, but you still taste it as it is beef.
Yeah. Prawn crisps.
Prawn cocktail,
Does it taste anything like fish? No.
No. Rightly so.
Do you think that's why the powers that be, look, the people who are running this machine that we call Planet
Earth,
it's
a simulation.
Do you think that's why they took Royster's T-bone steak off the shelves quite quickly? Like, you've overreached
them. They still get them.
I know you can, but...
Well, there's only like five in a packet.
Yeah, but Jimmy, the resistance is working away.
Right.
If you're going to help us.
If you only get five in a packet, just crunch them a bit. You get loads more.
Anyway, I believe that the Matrix new film will be out at some point soon.
Are we done with Chelsea City?
I thought Man City were outstanding in this game.
Oh, they were fantastic.
Magnificent. They were magnificent. There's no two ways about that.
A little surprised, actually, by how much Chelsea kind of allowed City to have the ball, because I don't think it was the case that that Chelsea were just overawed by City. I think it was a deliberate tactic. Clearly, it was a deliberate tactic to keep Werner and Lukaku up and hitting them on the break. But I was surprised by how willing to roll over to City's kind of superiority in possession that Tuchel was. I thought, you know, once City scored and Chelsea started to come out a bit more, you thought, well, this, you know, they've come closer to getting anything out of the game here than they haven't, so why not kind of back your own players a bit more and go toe-to-toe with it, especially at home?
I wonder if it wasn't that, and I wonder if it was just that City was so on it. Yeah. That's just what they're capable of. I think because people have been seduced by what Tuchel's achieved at Chelsea in such a short amount of time, you know, and in many ways rightly so, when City are at it, and the system they're playing works really well, and they're so well drilled, and they're so technically good.
What do you do?
It can be quite hard to get a foothold, I think. So maybe a bit of that involved.
I agree. I think when Manchester City play like that, I don't know what you've got to do to stop them. And I think that with we often sort of go on about Guardiola overthinking things. Well, fortunately for Manchester City, this wasn't a semi-final or a final of a Champions League, and they have been beaten by Chelsea in you know, since Tuchel's been there. You saw the reaction of the players and the fans after the game. They were like, right, we've done them. We've fought. That's a huge one to get over the line, that. And I think with Manchester City, he got his team selection right. He had Rodri in there. Should have had him in the final, as many people say. But Rodri.
Rodders.
Yeah. We can all agree. Yeah.
This time next year, Rodri.
Yeah. Not the most
Is that Guardiola?
It was a go.
Very
it was
camp.
An attempt.
Very camp.
I've done old Rodri a disservice there.
Yeah.
But not the most disserviced Rodri in the Manchester area, of course.
No.
But I'm so sorry.
No, that's good.
But Manchester City, the way
Grealish has got it. Penny's
really
good. Dropped.
The penny's dropping everywhere.
Yeah, really good.
Jack Grealish has fitted in there superbly well.
Oh,
he was
great.
The only surprising thing was is Manchester City didn't score more. Then it was only just the one. They looked in control, but I would say Chelsea Not that this would have made a huge difference, but they did miss Mason Mount a little bit, you think?
Yeah.
They did, because they got a little bit bogged down.
Yeah. The outlet wasn't there.
Yeah. You realise what Mount does when he's not there. I think sometimes he's not the most flashiest player.
But on the half turn, he's amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what they needed, to just sort of give them, alleviate the pressure a little bit and so on and so forth. But with Man City, what's really impressive with this kind of performance, they look very silky in possession. They created chances. As I say, the only thing was they didn't take one or two that perhaps they should have done. But defensively, you see Diaz, the way he's blocking, the way he's getting into it. They're up for the fight. And Chelsea are a powerful side as well. And Manchester City have got a few more diminutive players. And you think, well, maybe Chelsea will just lean into them a bit. But the way Bernardo Silva, the way he played was superb, you know.
Little possession squirrels.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, they are.
But they're so strong. They were just so together. I mean, I know I'm basically making the same point over and over again, but it was that impressive. You know, so but Guardiola has now broken a Manchester City record himself. This was his 221st win as Man City manager, meaning he's won the most games of any manager in the club's history, overtaking Les McDowell.
Yeah, and he managed City for 13 years. Yeah. Guardiola's just starting his sixth.
And he had the same amount of money equivalent, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's an unnecessary probably dig, isn't it?
probably just not relevant, is it? Games like that time. But can we briefly touch on how Jack Grealish can bring light to a blind alley like a local council with a huge extension of its budget all of a sudden? It's like it looks like he's going nowhere and then suddenly just bang, he's got through.
I think also what goes unspoken or isn't spoken enough about Grealish is what he does it at such speed. Like he's not
it looks like it's not in control.
Exactly. And he's not like as in a proper gazelle of a forward in terms of his pace, but he over and over again you get serious, like, experienced defenders, like in this case, I think a couple of times, Azpilicueta, who is, you know, one of the most decorated Chelsea players in history. I think he's fourth behind the obvious ones, Terry, Lampard and Cech, in terms of appearances for Chelsea, something like that. I'm going to say he's not a spring chicken, right? He's not green. Grealish can make him commit. If you can make a player like Azpilicueta commit in the penalty area over and over again, you're a special player, in my opinion. And the fact that he can do it with such quickness of thought and quickness of feet, so consistently over and over and over again. And what he does, and you saw it a lot when he played for Villa in the Championship, for example, you go, oh well, yeah, but is he up against much, you know, these defenders at his level? He hasn't found a defender that he can't get to do that. It's mad, isn't it?
So impressive,
so consistent.
You
how
put
he
him in any team, I think he just beats what's in front of him or plays that way. But it was a great day for him because his Manchester City won. And the club that he loves as well, Jim, Aston Villa,
they had
won
a lovely old win, didn't they?
Didn't they just? Their first win at Old Trafford since 2009. Great header from Courtney Horse to win it.
Yeah, Courtney Horse.
Yeah, that's what the commentator was calling him.
Horse.
I've had a little horse.
I think I've had four different pronunciations since the weekend.
I wasn't sure. I was thinking house.
I like whores.
Yeah, just I know you careful. Do, Jim, but back to the name.
It's getting clipped, isn't it? Yeah.
But Courtney Horse, that was what Jonathan Pearce on commentary was calling him. But when he galloped in to head the winner, which was a beauty, by the way, Pearce was furious on commentary. Yeah, to hear this, I had to sort of stop it and write down the whole quote. Who was standing on the near post? Modern day, no one. And that's why there's a goal. Put a fullback on the post. Why? If it works so well for generations, should it not work now?
Bit of Andrew Neil about that.
Yeah, a bit
of Brexit about that. Absolutely. For sure.
Oh, massively.
Can I say something potentially unpopular, both to my colleagues here and to people listening?
Please.
The goal was offside. It should have been offside.
It was,
you think?
Yeah.
What, because of the player interfering with the goalkeeper?
Yeah, I just don't see how. I mean,
I do agree.
The powers that be have made a rod for their own back with this stuff. Like, if you're going to start to talk about the minutiae, whether a player's interfering or not, you know, it's a set piece, right? It was a corner, not a cross, yeah. It's a set piece. If you're in the penalty area at a set piece, by definition, you're interfering with play. But that doesn't really even matter if De Gea had a good chance of saving it or not. You know, I've seen it time and time again. Even if a player runs across and it's a dummy run, the goalkeeper makes a movement, and ultimately it doesn't get in the way of him saving it or not saving it, it's still offside. You're still interfering with play. And so to me, I don't take anything away from Villa, because it's a big win for them. And I think, you know, United should be ashamed of themselves how they played, to be honest. It's an offside goal. And I don't think there's anything, you can't get away from that. Well, I don't see what the argument against it is.
You compare it to the Leicester City one, as they did on Match of the Day.
Yeah.
And Harvey Barnes, there was a couple.
I didn't see Match of the Day, but I remember it. Yeah.
And you think to yourself, I remember talking with Brassel in the studio, and it was, and we were a bit like, yeah, I can see how that's been given. bit of a, you're annoyed if it goes against you, you're happy if it goes for you kind of thing. That one, I just thought, yeah, like that. They've got away with one there. And that is the inconsistency. But it shows you, again, the nature of decisions in football. They are not binary. Often. Yeah. But, I mean, it's in the interpretation is
yeah,
the word.
They have to be interpreted. And, yeah. And that's the issue. Jim, you sound a little bit sceptical when I said that.
Yeah, I feel like that De Gea did have enough of a chance at getting it. And I think the line's got to be drawn somewhere. And I feel that if that had gone against my team, I'd have thought it was harsh. But, you know.
Yeah, I just feel like in those kind of situations where you've got a set piece which is designed by the laws of the game to give the attacking player an advantage for a particular reason, and you are going into that penalty area as an attacking player, I just think it's very hard to make a decision you're not interfering in any way.
For fans of tradition,
yeah,
the referee levelled it up by giving Manchester United a penalty at Old Trafford.
Yeah. the tribute act continues.
Yeah,
I actually thought that was probably a penalty.
Oh God, yeah, yeah. Again, it was, if it happens to your team, you want it all day.
Why are you blaming
maybe
the
not the way to judge it. But.
Why are you both having a pop?
I'm just saying that he didn't give one end, he did it the other.
Yeah. One of the highlights of the season was Emi Martinez apparently saying to Ronaldo, "You should take this Cristiano. This Bruno guy will miss."
He absolutely loves it. Because Martinez, after his exploits at Arsenal, he won the cup and he was so emotional afterward. You can think, what a lovely fella. And he might well be a lovely fella. But everyone forgot he's an Argentinian footballer. Yeah. Okay?
A big unit as
well. Oh, what a big unit.
A very intimidating presence.
Absolutely right. He was, performed heroics for Argentina in the Copa America. Obviously, they won a penalty shootout against Colombia when he saved against Yerry Mina, who did that little sort of jig sort of stuttery sort of run-up kind of thing, which Messi was giving him pelters for as well, by the way. Dance now!
You're not dancing now, are you?
Bailar ora, he was saying. Like, dance now sort of thing, or something like that. Martin is absolutely loves it, and that little jig that he did, it was
so good.
I mean, it was out with a Pardew category,
it reminded me of a certain Sir James Vardy and how he gives it the big one, and it made me think, has Cristiano met Jamie Vardy?
Maybe.
I don't think that their paths will have crossed in football yet, so we've got that to come.
The campaign has to continue in earnest to get Vardy to do that celebration. He needs to score against Man United and has to do that celebration, and I'm going to keep saying it.
Well, he's not short of goals at the moment, at either end.
Yeah,
but it's true. The Bruno penalty was absolutely horrendous.
Have you ever seen a penalty volleyed before?
I think I paused
it. It was extraordinary.
I paused on the TV and I reckon it was 3 feet over the bar.
I mean, but we know his style. It's that Jorginho sort of stutter and the little jump.
Yeah.
He didn't do that. He seemed to be too worked up, and that's why people were saying about Martinez, did he get in his head? And with Ronaldo, obviously people are saying, is he going to get the penalties? Fernandes, no, I'm the man. He was too fired up. It was a short run-up. He didn't do, and unless he's changed his style. Rashford changed his style sort of fairly recently. Unfortunately, we saw what happened there, although he did score one before the tournament. But it looked like he was caught up in the occasion.
To me, it's a Ronaldo factor. I don't want to be too wicked whispers about it. I don't want to be too kind of cliched, but there's too much circumstantial evidence to suggest that Ronaldo's not playing a role there. First of all, Ronaldo looked so slow in this game, and that's going to become a real problem for Man United if they're not careful. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it's not only the fact that all that stuff went on with Martinez. To me, that's a bit of a sideshow. I think if it's a couple of pieces of evidence you can put towards the fact that Ronaldo is affecting this with Bruno. Mm. One is that he started off the season taking free kicks, Bruno, and now all of a sudden he isn't. Mm-hmm. And the second one is Bruno Fernandes did like a 300-word apology on Instagram for missing a penalty. Why the fuck are you doing that?
Well, that's...
whatever next?
Yeah, that's so unnecessary. It's kind of like, look, mate, you've been the best player for what? 2 years now, or a year and a half.
So much of that is his dead ball
delivery,
though.
Even if he hasn't,
and also his, the fact that it's so reliable from the penalty spot. If all that goes now to Ronaldo, you are. I know someone's got to take them, but
the next penalty is going to be really interesting.
But this is the problem now. It's now a thing.
Mm.
Who's going to take the next penalty?
Well, after the game, he said that Villa had got what they wanted from the disruption.
What, 3 points?
Essentially. But also, his comments before the game about not getting penalties since a certain manager, meaning obviously Jurgen Klopp, had suggested maybe they got some soft ones, was really interesting. Because it's like... It's like when Alex Ferguson did this, it really worked, didn't it? Mm. It really got in people's heads because he had that gravitas that you listened when he spoke. But again, this sounds like he's just copying from that playbook, and it just sounds a bit daft.
Yeah. But it's interesting. It's exactly the same thing, but it shows you just cannot do a carbon copy of that in that way.
Yeah, well, and because Ferguson's won loads of stuff.
Yeah,
and he's never had a team relegated. You know, it's I don't think he has anyway. It's a it's an interesting situation because if you look at United in the table, they've got exactly the same record as Chelsea.
Yeah.
And everyone's talking about how great Chelsea
are. Yeah, yeah.
But I can't get over the fact or the thought that United are less than the sum of their parts. And they've had this problem at home by their own standards for quite a long time now. Mm-hmm. Away from home, they're amazing. And you can see why, because that's just how it kind of shakes out the way they play. At home, they need... I cannot get over the fact that people are talking about Man United in this group of four teams that could win the Premier League. And it's basically the four teams that are in the top four at the moment. Mm. To me... regardless of whether they sign Ronaldo or not, which I think you can make a convincing argument either way, makes them better or worse, they're nowhere near a Chelsea or a Man City or a Liverpool. I can't see that at all. Yeah. And I know they've had good high finishes recently, but not the way that those other teams are strengthened and the way they kind of got players back and stuff like that.
I think if they finish fourth, it'll be a good season.
I agree. I think they've got a good chance of finishing fourth, actually.
Yeah, no, I do.
No, it depends how Brighton get on tonight, doesn't it?
That's very true. Yeah, big one tonight, of course. But, I mean, with regards to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he probably, I mean, I know we've been saying this for a while, but he probably won't be in the job that much longer. Tim Sherwood said last week, I can see Ronaldo as Manchester United manager within 18 months.
Oh man! In no other profession would he still be working. It's just simple as that, isn't it? It's as simple as that. In no other profession you can think of would that man be getting gainful employment. I think he should. I think it's got to the point now where he has to do the decent thing and say, you know what? I need some time out of the side. You know,
I need some time out of your lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I just think what Tim Sherwood is currently doing is unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
Oh, dear. Right then. Well, from one former Premier League manager to another. Ladies and gentlemen, we finish the show by going to the Eternal City, to Rome, of course. The Rome Derby. Did anybody see this?
I didn't watch the game.
What a match it was.
It looked like it was full of incidents.
Oh, my goodness. Lazio won 3-2. A big win for Smokey Morris.
Yep.
Maurizio Sarri. Jose Mourinho's Roma, of course, have been doing very well this season. You know, Mourinho's been up to his old tricks.
But now Sarri's in Rome.
Yeah.
Are they doing the smoke signal thing that they do for the Pope?
That's how he got the job.
It's white smoke.
He didn't realise. He thought, they're having a good old puff over there. That's me. And then he just turned up and they needed a new manager.
It's white smoke.
Match made in heaven, you would say. But yes, what was quite pleasing for Lazio in particular was Pedro scored a lovely goal. Of course, he was at Roma not that long ago. Mourinho came in, didn't seem to see eye to eye, and he was gone. And he walked across the city, followed the smoke signals to Sarri, and he's turned up there and he scored a lovely, lovely goal. Mourinho said after the game, unfortunately, a fantastic game was ruined by the referee and VAR, who were not at the right level for this match.
It's begun already.
He even said in that quote, he said something like, Italian football has improved a lot. He said that in the sentence. Wow. It was like, careful, Jose, careful with that. But we look forward to seeing what else he's going to say as well. But yeah, it was a great game of football. Lazio's Lucas Leiva got a 24th-minute yellow card and didn't get a second. And Jose said the lack of a second yellow from Lucas Leiva was important too. So he's picking through all these sort of things, of course. He did a bit of a Phil Brown after the game. He didn't get on a motorbike and ride across America. He did a full-time team talk on the pitch with his players.
I mean, like, it's a sorry state, isn't it? Where one of the greatest managers that's ever played the game has declined so much you can compare him in a legitimate way to Phil Brown.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Mourinho obviously didn't sign up for the press conference, did he, afterwards?
Yeah, well...
He's playing the hits. Yeah. He's playing the hits.
He's playing
talking
the
about
hits.
Guardiola. Listen, he's playing the hits. Tony Adams playing the hits. Mourinho, this is perfect.
Yeah, well, compare that to Maurizio Sarri, who's down the other end of the stadium with an eagle on his arm.
That's amazing.
He came out, he was... Hey, oh, my goodness.
Don't give it a fag. Yeah.
It's already got a very weird life. Don't bring this into it.
So, tiny lungs.
It gets even weirder, because Sarri said about the eagle, she sleeps close to my room at the Formello training ground.
Passive smoking now.
So I hear her sometimes.
That implies that he sleeps in his office, doesn't it?
Yeah. Or in a cage. But yeah, Sarri was love. Because he's often a
just
bit
a big
sort of
feeder for the fags.
Yeah.
nibbling away.
You know, like, he looks sometimes a bit downbeaten, doesn't he? Yeah. Sorry. Honestly, check out the footage. I have never seen the man look so delighted in my
it's
life.
Great.
Well, you would, given the journey he's had, you would.
But of course, absolutely.
Yeah, but he just won a derby and you're controlling an eagle.
Oh, yeah.
It was walking on air. Walking on smoke.
Yeah. Oh, dear, yeah. Oh, when he was past that eagle, what a
do you reckon if he got, if
what
he
a
got
moment.
Like, if Sarri did get some genuinely fresh air,
yeah,
he'd get like a headache.
Maybe.
The same way, you like, you know, when you open the window and put your head out the window, it's really fucking hot or something. You just get, oh, God, that's too much.
What is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Could be. Could be. Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. What a way to finish the show. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Big news. Big news, by the way. Coming down your ramble pipe, of course, is that we've got a very special ramble meet for you today. Andy only spoke with the one and only JJ Okocha.
Legend. So good they named him twice.
JJ Okocha Okocha. Get over to Football Ramble Presents for the full interview with one of the Premier League's most legendary cult heroes. We can all agree. What a man. What a player.
Yeah, legend.
What a career. Did Andy get him to do one of his legendary little flicks during the interview? Find out. It's over on Football Ramble Presents. Get involved.
I imagine he was like shimmying so much at one point Andy was looking at the wrong screen.
Yeah.
Where have you gone?
Oh, legend. Great stuff. Right, on tomorrow's show, I'm back with Andy Brassel and Vish. Get involved.
Subbing us out.
Yeah.
Are you looking forward to it as much?
Oh, about the same.
Okay, fair enough.
Thank you
Good
very
answer.
Much. Thank you very much, Luke
Cheers.
Moore. Thank you, Jim Campbell.
You're welcome.
Thank you, everybody. See you tomorrow. To the Football Ramble. There was a cracker at the Brentford Community Stadium and Arsenal won the North London Derby. It's Monday, 27th of September. I'm Marcus Speller.
Sorry. He worked his nuts off to get that in. It's like fucking, it's like listening to fucking Informer by Snow.
I was genuinely thinking about the game, just enjoying the goals in my head again.
You absolute rotter.
Licky boom boom down.
Sorry,
get
lads.
On with it.
Should we do that again?
Yeah.
I think we're going to have to, aren't we?
Yeah.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. Then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.